The volume. AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a 1-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give Love and Logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Saving starts with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider.
Jenkins and Jones is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. Tons of reasons why I love betting the NFL on FanDuel Sportsbook. It's America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use, it's fast, safe, and secure, and it has fast payouts as quick as 2 hours. There's also so many bet types, including same-game parlay bets, live betting, player props, and futures. FanDuel is making it easy for everyone to bet this season, with a bunch of promotions that they'll be sharing all season long on our podcast. If you've been listening along, you've heard a lot of those. There's risk-free bets and same-game parlay bets, enhanced odds markets, and more. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now and sign up with promo code JANJ so they know we sent you. That's J&J. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. See full terms and conditions at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. It's Wednesday, December 1st, and we've got a very special episode. We are wrapping up our conversation about Marcus Thompson's Dynasties, which we've been reading for the book club, with basically the whole episode is an interview with Marcus. Great interview. I feel like we always know it's a great interview when we end the interview and then talk to someone for another 15 minutes, which is exactly what happened with Marcus. But as always, Jenkins and Jones, hosted by my good friends, Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, everybody, how's it going?
LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubbas? And I do want to say that welcome is getting very Price is Righty. There was a welcome to
welcome.
That W-E-L was, you know, that was a lot of emphasis on that motherfucker, you know what I mean?
It's we're up early. I think we've mentioned on the show a couple times, we're recording very early on Wednesdays now. So I got to, like, you know, I got to fake the funk a little bit, you know, like, it's the Volume Podcast Network. Yeah, yeah. Jenkins Jones, welcome. I'm Mike G. before we get to Marcus, we did all get a chance to catch that that Suns-Warriors game last night. Not the game I was hoping for. I'll just be completely honest with you. And I was excited because I had, like, rearranged things to actually sit and watch the whole game. So I wanted to see Steph go. I wanted to see Steph go. I mean, straight up. And that's what it is. The Warriors are a great team. The Suns are a great team. But basketball is still the sport where if I clear my schedule for a Tuesday for that game, I want to see Steph go 18-19 from beyond the arc. Do some crazy shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Steph stunk it up. I mean, I think it was, what, 4-for-21 or some crazy
statistically
shit like that,
worst game I think he's had.
Yeah. But the thing about Steph is, next game, that is going to be must-see TV. Because that boy is going to – yeah, he's going to spaz the fuck out whoever he plays against next. He doesn't have bad games, you know, back-to-back like that. So we'll see.
The things that I would triple – first of all, pay Ayton, please. What the fuck are y'all doing? You are fucking weird and a little crazy for not paying that, man. But what tripped me out is, like, is there anyone who understands basketball better than Chris Paul? Like – you know what I'm saying? I think he's closing in on 40. You know what I'm saying? Like, he can't score like he used to. He can't defend like he used to. But he still controls the fucking game like fucking Frederic Chopin in this motherfucker tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, it's just crazy how he controls the speed. He has his finger on the pulse of the game at all times. Booker went out, and they were down. And they ended up winning by double digits because Chris Paul... You know, partly, I mean, well, they made everything hard for Steph, and that's going to make it hard for the Warriors. But Chris Paul just controlled the game like he knew every different aspect, understood every different aspect. And it's just wild to see somebody who is not the same player, you know what I'm saying? They were, but it's still the most valuable player on that team, you know what I'm saying, due to just his understanding of basketball.
Point guard, man.
Indeed.
He's one of the GOATs, bro. You know, like I said, he's the most complete point guard I've ever seen. You know, like, I think that's going to be his claim to fame when he hangs it up.
They did. Steph was like, I mean, he was airballing shit.
Steph was in jail.
Consecutively, yeah.
Steph was in jail, bro. And Michael Bridges, Bridges had that, man.
Yes.
He wasn't, that's the thing, like, I think the thing is, like, guarding Steph, everybody has a little fear. I mean, it's normal, right? You know what I mean? Like, that, I mean, this motherfucker's he's a murderer. He's a killer, as Marcus Thompson said. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I didn't feel like Bridges was had any fear at all. He's like, if I'm going to get cooked, I'm going to get cooked. But I'm heating him up. You know what I'm saying? Like, and they were just putting pressure on him. They were running at him all the time. So, I mean, he was incredible too. But yeah, I mean,
he deserves a lot. He deserves a lot of credit for sure. And I, you know, they talked about it in the broadcast. You're defending Steph. Whether he scores 40 or 20 is, you have some influence in that, but largely, you know, that's on how he's playing.
Steph
that night,
defends,
right?
Steph when Steph isn't Steph. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. So, you know, I do think he played him the way coaches try and get defenders to psychologically, right? Just like, accept that you're going to do the best you can do, and then it's not up to you what happens after that.
Right.
But I can only imagine, as a guy who's a defensive specialist, you see a player having the season that Steph's having, missed the rim twice. That's got to be a little Celsius energy drink in your bloodstream.
Speaking of Celsius, shout out to Celsius. The preferred energy drink of LeJethro Jenkins.
I would absolutely take this as a Western Conference final. I mean, I would love a series of that. It was a really fun game. It was very cerebral, like you said. You could see how Chris Paul was working. You throw Devin Booker back in there. You throw Klay Thompson in on the Warriors side. That's a fun fucking series.
Yeah, I think Klay comes back, and I think it's – and Steph – Klay comes back. obviously. Steph is just Steph. I think they cook him. You know what I mean? And I don't mean like cook by a dub, but I think it's not. I mean, it might be a 5-6 game series. You know what I mean? With if they, everybody's playing how they should play. You know what I mean? But I don't know. Last night was interesting to see how Chris was doing what Chris shit. You know what I mean? At this point, it's just wild to watch. And we thought the Suns were like, you know, we thought that was a team that wasn't going to be back.
Yeah, so I was we were completely wrong on the Suns.
The opposite of right. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we buried the Suns. We thought they'd be like maybe a four or five seed. You know what I'm saying?
They're like one of the best teams in the league. Nobody saw that shit.
You know, they're going to not make the playoffs,
but we didn't think they're going to be back in the West Conference Finals or like be one of the best in the league.
Absolutely. Straight up didn't think that. And they were Stephen A. Smith and J.J. Redick were arguing about this shit on ESPN. Like, I absolutely, prior to the season, was in the camp of the championship window's closed. They'll just be one of those teams, you know, like the Derrick Rose Bulls or something. They'll be one of those teams that if you really watch a lot of basketball, you remember fondly. But that's like, but the story's already been written. And I absolutely did not think that they would be losing Devin Booker and still beating the Warriors, you know, in a game
that's between the two of the top teams. Without Booker, maybe it might have been even 20, something like that.
But it's
down almost 10.
It's what Tyler said. You just can't overrate still at his age the impact that Chris Paul can have on a game. That it's like, what does this game need from me tonight? Does this game need me to take over scoring? Does this need me to bring the tempo down and allow us to get Steph a little bit out of rhythm with the way that we're defending him? He'll do whatever, and there's just not a lot of guys like that, you know, who have every pitch. They have every club in the bag, like whatever other fucking analogy you want to use.
Every club in the bag? Is that a little golf talk on Jiggins and Jones not coming from me?
Golf talk.
Cut it right here. Cut it right here, bro. It doesn't get any better.
The NFL playoff race is heating up, and you can make every moment more with FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, all customers get a $10 parlay bet bonus. Just place $20 in same-game parlay bets and get a $10 bonus, regardless of if your bet wins or loses. Big game Sunday night coming up between the Bengals and Chargers. So if you wanted to build a same-game parlay, you might be thinking the Bengals are going to need a big game from Joe Burrow to beat the Chargers. So I'm going to create a parlay with the Chargers to cover, Burrow passing props, and Bengals total points. And you'll get better odds than you would have by taking the Bengals spread or money line. But same game parlays are not the only reason I love betting on all the NFL action with FanDuel Sportsbook. It's also easy to use. They've got live betting. All my friends use it. They've got fast withdrawals. When you win, FanDuel pays your winnings in as little as 2 hours. I also love all their odds boosts and specials. There's no feeling like nailing a same-game parlay bet, so lock in yours today on FanDuel Sportsbook and make every moment more. New to FanDuel Sportsbook? Sign up today with promo code JNJ to also receive a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code JNJ, that's J&J, so they know that we sent you. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max bonus $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. We're excited to welcome on our special guest for this week, Marcus Thompson, the author of Dynasties, which we were talking about chapter by chapter over the last couple months. Marcus, obviously, also a legend in the sports writing game. You can check him out at The Athletic. And he just had that piece drop about Klay Thompson, no relation, that was very excellent. Marcus, thanks for hopping on the show, man. We appreciate it.
What are you talking about? Any Thompsons that do well is my cousin somehow or another. You just got arrested, maybe not. But if you out here doing it, you family.
So what's up, man? How you doing? We appreciate you coming on, bro.
Man, I'm happy to be here. I'm a frequent listener. You guys have not only had me dying laughing on many a car rides, but I've had the occasion to explain a lot to my daughter after she hears some of the stuff y'all say. So great teaching moments courtesy of this podcast. I mean, you know, you just sometimes you just get in your groove and you forget what, you know, what's happening. You're like, oh yeah. Let me tell you what they meant by that.
Teaching moments is an interesting way of putting that.
You know what I'm saying? hey, they gotta learn somehow.
We had a real issue in my family when my son discovered that the podcast is on YouTube, because he knows how to search YouTube on the TV. And I walked out and he was watching an episode, and it was like a slow motion action movie. I was like diving across the couch like, no.
Didn't Maya hit you with the bye recently? Didn't she?
Yes.
To kind of like let you know, like
what, bro? You're a 6-year old kindergartner. Your mom is gonna actually murder me if you're listening to the podcast.
Wow, come on, we about to call somebody on that.
I know that.
I mean, my daughter's a teenager at least. Goodness, I mean, she's a new teenager, but she in the building.
Oh my god!
Sure. So yeah, man. Great book. You know, it was a wonderful read. You know, we did the whole book club thing with it, like we mentioned. So, you know, just curious about you know, me and you are homies. You know, you hit me up a couple years back about the
huge
idea
fan,
this, right?
And it was huge great to see fan.
Yeah.
Hey, cut it out.
We homies, man. Cut it out.
When
cut
I was
it out.
The figures. He was like, yeah, you know, it's not enough. I was like,
all good though, man. But I love how it came together. You know, I love seeing your idea flesh out, you know, like this. It was an amazing book. It was as good as I knew it would be coming from you. So, you know, I'm just curious, just kind of, you know, walk the listeners through, you know, your whole process of, you know, brainstorming this, putting it together and all that.
I mean, to be transparent, which I feel like is absolutely necessary on this podcast, the process began with a check. or the commitment. I wasn't sitting around thinking like, hey, let's write about dynasties. It was like, yo, somebody wanted to pay me to do it. So that kind of began the process. And I like to say that because especially on this book club, like Tyler, you already know I was sweating about this. Like, I don't feel like I belong.
Yeah.
After the guests y'all have already had, like, you know what I'm saying? I feel like I'm out here playing. I'm Smokey. I'm the only one out here playing.
You're listen, dog.
We don't belong with the guests we've had.
For real. That's not
the truth. We apologize. Sorry, Marcus. I hate that you're on here with us.
That is what that was.
Clint just got New York Times top 10. And we were like, why the fuck? We were the last interview you did before the New York Times top 10. Why?
How embarrassing.
I was listening to that, trying to, like, you know, get ready. And I'm like, dude, what are we doing here? Like, this is like real spit. But so I just don't want to front like I was some kind of like inspirational philosopher who had this. Nah, that wasn't it. And there are writers who are like that, man. There are writers who like got to craft their idea. But once, you know, once the deal was done for me, it became about like, I know y'all remember like when the Warriors were popping, it was just super jarring to me how the Warriors went from sexy, fun league pass team to the enemy, to the Death Star. And it was crazy. And as someone who grew up a Warriors fan, like watching them be terrible for so long and like watching like kind of they become like finally it was their turn on the top. And that being so novel and so fresh, it was kind of wild to look up and everybody's like, we hate this team and they're bad for basketball, right? So essentially, I wanted to have this discussion about dynasties and their place in the NBA. And while everybody was talking about this was so bad for basketball, I really wanted to make the case that, nah, buddy, they've actually always been hugely vital to basketball. And the reason we ever even fully care as a society about a bunch of black dudes playing hoop is because they get to dynastic levels. And that was more like a journey through the NBA through the eyes of dynasties, kind of making the case that, you know, every blue moon when we get one of these special teams and these special players, we should probably like enjoy that instead of like ruin the fact that Charlotte doesn't have a chance. Mm-hmm.
I don't think we hated. Well, I'll speak about.
Well, me. We did. We hated those Warriors,
you know,
bro.
I watched hella Warriors games because it was a. You had to watch Warriors games. They were must see TV. Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, you feel me? Yeah. But I hated the fans. Not like from Oakland. I would go to Oakland and be in a barbershop talking about this shit. And you know, barbershop conversation where it can get really ugly. And it was Gucci, you know what I mean? I hated the motherfucking Hoka wearing ass, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Non-melanated motherfuckers that was arguing with me that had never touched a basketball before, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, and they would try to get you fired on some dumb shit. But anyway,
my point was, there was some, y'all, like... Yeah. It's not like I'm not saying y'all is in like, oh, you're in this other segment. We all are hoop fans. Like we all are nuts about this. And to me, it's the other. This is why dynasties are great, because you get so caught up that you end up hating them. And it's the collaboration that makes it something so crazy. Like it was the same with LeBron. People hated LeBron. LeBron was lit for 7-8 years before that. But then when people started hating him, like it really turned up. So it's to me, it's like the synergy of the people who go crazy for it. And then the synergy of the people who just want to see them fall or just don't like their existence. Yeah. That is NBA basketball from its history, from the beginning. Yeah, so I felt like I still feel like, man, we literally was a part of history and we're all going to look back on this like, yo, I was there. Like, even the people who hated it, like, I was in the building, yo. I was there. I watched every game. And in that way, we're like some of our forefathers in this.
For sure. I think there's a difference between hating a team and being a hater. You know what I mean? Like I hated the Warriors because I'm a Bron guy and, you know, they were taking rings off of Bron's table, right? I hated them for that reason. But I was never a hater where I didn't want to give them credit. They're the best basketball team I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, flat out. Period. You know what I mean? They play beautiful basketball. I've
that
always
phrase was coming
credit.
Through gritted teeth. I listened to every word. Y'all were like,
right? Right? You know, like I said, they're the best basketball team I've ever seen. They play beautiful basketball. I just hate that they got in my guy's way. Flat out.
I hated the Celtics coming up. Like, I hated them jokers. I hated Mikal. It was hard. Like, as much as you respected Bird and thought Bird was such a gangster, like, I didn't want to see Bird win. Like, I was rocking with Magic at them. Like, and you know, obviously there's all kind of social factors into that, but that was the point. Like, no matter, I couldn't stand the Celtics. I hated all that green, right? But you know what I was doing when the Celtics and Lakers was on? I was watching that, Jeff.
Watching
it.
Watch every,
flat out, I really never gave a damn about the Celtics franchise, but it was my favorite chapter in the book. Like, I knew Bird was a dog, but I didn't give, you know what I'm saying? I didn't really give a fuck about them, but I didn't know to how much of an extent he was a dog, you know what I mean? What was your favorite chapter to write? Like, and did you enjoy that chapter being that you hated the Celtics?
No, I did. Believe it or not, like, the Celtics chapters ended up my favorite. I'm not a Celtics guy.
I loved it.
Bruh, right. I was so into the Russell Celtics. Like, and keep in mind, I'm writing this while the country is on fire, right? Like, so, you know, we all in our diaspora feelings, you know what I'm saying? Like, we out here ready to hit these streets.
Trademark that. Diaspora feelings.
You know what I'm saying?
Big, like,
I'm in Oakland, so you know it's going down out here.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm writing this while it's happening. And then you start, and I'm reading. Like, I lived, one of the best parts was going to the old newspapers and reading, like, what was happening live. And the crazy part that hit me was, while all these current players are doing their, you know, social justice thing and using their platform and speaking out, and we were applauding them, rightfully so, them dudes was doing it like we might die. Like, Sam Jones was out here. Bill Russell was out here facing death, like literal death. And I was like, yo, we really don't really talk about this like this. Like, we really don't have a reverence for that era. I started thinking about Tommy Heinsohn. You know, the Celtics had the first all-black starting five. And it was really, they had four black dudes starting, and Tommy Heinsohn, he got hurt, and Willie Nauss came in. So that was the first black starting five. But before that, Tommy Heinsohn was rocking with four black dudes in the starting five in Boston during a busing crisis. Like, he was a savage. Like, what did he hear at the dinner parties? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this dude was a gangster. Like, so that chapter, like, gave me a real appreciation for, A, like, that what that team went through and just how innovative they were and just how they, like, they were doing this in Chuck Taylor's face of death, right? Like in panties, basically. Like this is a, this is a, this is, you know what I'm saying? Like we
did anybody hear that? He said panties.
I'm just saying, like, we talk about these stories about I walked in the snow and they're like, no, their story really was kind of that though, right? Like, right. So it's like, we don't respect that enough. And then the new Celtics chapter, I guess I didn't appreciate the two worlds of basketball, the black basketball and the white basketball, the exciting ABA kind of flashy playground, which had kind of taken over the NBA. And then you had this era of like, where, you know, Michael Ray Richardson was on coke, like while he get dropping 25, you know what I'm saying? And it became, the NBA became like, yo, how many black players can you get on your squad? And then here comes Bird, like, hey, hold on, y'all. Like, basketball is this universal sport and we white boys can play. Let me show you something. And I get, like, I didn't know this live when it was happening, but it was kind of cool to see white people kind of reclaim their posts in basketball. Like, hey, hey, we can hoop too, yo. Like, it was like, Bird was such a gangster. Like, it was fun, like, kind of diving into that.
40 years ago with one dude. Yes, for sure.
Right.
The one guy. The one guy. I, you know, it's funny you were talking about how you felt about the Celtics. That was my one stumbling block with the book, was just the Spurs chapter, where I grew up in Southern California. Like, I'm from Long Beach. I grew up watching the Lakers. The Shaq Kobe teams were my high school. That's my, like, foundational heart memory basketball teams, right? And I was, like, reading the chapter, and there were so many teams that I had not previously given a fuck about that I ended up caring about or being interested in from your book. But we got on the pod after the Spurs chapter, and I was like, I can't do it. Fuck them. I was like, fuck these dudes forever. That's bro. Right. I'll never not hate them.
That's legit. That's why we love it. I mean, I felt, I, you know what, I'm not the biggest Spurs fan either. Like, you know, I mean, I respect them, you know what I'm saying? But it's hard to look at, like, what we see right now. Like, we just watch Giannis, like, enter the room of eliteness with, like, this incredible playoff performance. You know, we see Luka has been crowned already. Jokic is the MVP. Like, man, you can't watch this and not appreciate the Spurs, who had everybody like, yo, if you ain't out here scouting, we about to kill you. We going to keep finding dudes at the end of the draft. You better step your game up and stop relying on homie at Rucker Park. Right. It's hard to, like, Spurs is just a team you got to respect, man. Like, you just got to respect them, and even if you don't like them.
And that's it. Respect them, and that's it.
Tyler loved the Spurs. Didn't you like watching the Spurs, Tyler?
I hated them at first. I thought they were boring as hell. Because you got to understand, you know, the style of ball they were playing. You know, I was in love with the ISO Kobe AI ball, you know, during their peak in the early 2000s, right? But then, you know, towards the end, you know, the 2010s, I appreciated Spurs basketball around that time.
The way they swing the ball is poetic.
It really is. Beautiful ball movement. Beautiful ball movement.
For real, it is, though.
The Spurs are the team. They're the dynasty for the people who could just pop up at any gym. I don't care if it's like CYO, 7th grade hoop, or like a bunch of dudes at 24-hour fitness. You can sit down and you can appreciate what's happening. Like, that's the Spurs dynasty, because you got to, like, actually pay attention to basketball to appreciate the Spurs. If you out here for the show.
And I was not when I was 17, bro.
If you're out here for the drama, the storyline, you're out here for all that, like, the Spurs going to leave you disappointed. Yeah. Like, you know, they're going to leave you like, dude, what are we doing? But, I mean, they make Kobe vanilla. Think about that. Like, Kobe never had beef with nobody on the Spurs. Like, think about, like, how you do that with Kobe. Like, that's how dry they were.
Yeah, not a lot of 16-year-olds getting excited on, you know, backdoor cuts for layups and shit. But, you know, you grow up and you know, your taste matures a bit. But, Marcus, I remember I hit you, you know, when I first started the book. And I was like, bro, you know, after I read the Mike and chapter. And I was like, bro, I can't believe you made me interested in this Charlie Chaplin-ass era of hoops. You know what I'm saying? Because I did not give a shit about that era, but you made it interesting. So I'm wondering, like during your research, when you were putting this all together, like, was there anything that you actually learned that stuck out to you? You know, you mentioned, you know, you kind of realized things, the Celtics, you know, activism put the shit in perspective. Was there anything new that you, like, learned, you know, doing your research?
Yeah. That really jumped out. I had no idea basketball was like this trash second nature sport, like third nature even. Like, oh, a pro basketball, right? Like, like nobody cared at all. That like they was playing in high school gyms, like begging for fans. You know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah. Just to know, like they played in cages. I mean, think about that. Like they literally, and then their stories, like they'd be in the cage, right? Cause I don't think people know this. And you know, I don't want to like bore you with details of the book that we're talking about, but like the original basketball rules was the ball went out of bounds. The team that got the ball was from the player who went and got the ball. Remember we used to play that back in the day, these kids? Like you run over and ball go out of bounds. You had to run and get it and fight for it. And if you fought for it and you got it, then your team had the ball. It's not like it is now where if you send the ball out, the other team gets it. So they would literally be in the crowd wrestling for loose balls. So they put up cages because that would slow down the game. It was a mess. So they put up cages to kind of prevent that. And people be in the crowd, like, putting cigarettes through the cages, burning them, like, stabbing them. Yeah, like, this was, like, some trash. This was,
what the fuck like, is this?
This is true down to the lower levels. Yeah, if you read old newspaper articles, they call basketball players cagers.
Yeah, they were cagers,
like, for this example.
Pro Hoop used to be, like, a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. It was, like, terrible. But it was, like, nobody cared.
Blood sport.
So that's why I started. Like, yo, hey, all right, we got to shout out George Mikan because, like, he was the only thing people wanted to watch. It was college hoop and it was AAU basketball, not the AAU that we know, but like, you play for your city. That's what you did. Like, you play for your local squad. You ain't make no money doing it, but you was out here getting a little fame off hoop. Mikan turned it into something. Like, he proved that, like, because he was a 7-foot freak. Like, it wasn't like a bunch of them around. He was like this tall dude who was hella uncoordinated, and the coach was like, yo, I wonder, he must have been hella high. Yo, I wonder if this 7-foot dude, like, if we, like, he hella close to the rim, maybe we should teach him how to play hoop, right? And it ended up being this genius move. So I had no idea, none of that. My Jordan era, my basketball era began with Jordan, right? So I only know grace and beauty in basketball, right? I only know elite athleticism. I had no idea they were sticking dudes with syringes through cages while they...
Yeah, like I remember when you talked about how Bill Russell innovated defense by jumping. I was like, what the fuck?
Jumping Joe like, with the shoot with
Stone
the
Age.
With the jump
yeah, the
shot.
Dude,
I'm like,
the jump shot?
Hey, that's crazy,
fuck?
Right? There was two jumping Joes. It was this big matchup. It was jumping Jim Pollard and jumping Joe Folks. And they were like this huge matchup
some
between
Dick Tracy
jumping
shit,
Joe and
man.
Jumping Jim. So like we know about Jim Pollard. He went to my high school. I've been hearing about this dude since I was a kid. Like everybody knows Jim Pollard was this white dude who could jump hella high. I'm like, oh, there's another one. And it was like, nah, Joe Folks was jumping Joe Folks because he jumped when he shot. A revolutionary, like a pioneer. I was like, what?
The fuck? That's not even basketball. You
Can
know
you
what I mean?
Imagine running hella far past out court and then stopping completely and then like taking a set shot. But I guess they weren't running hella fast down court. I don't understand, but
they weren't popping any knees pulling up for a set shot at that time.
They weren't
for
doing
sure.
Step backs, huh?
It's more of an ease into it. I love the idea of Mikan's coach being high as hell, looking at him, looking up at the basket, looking back at him, looking up at the basket and going, we might have something here. Hold on. This man is
like
close
at
DePaul, to the rim.
I just saw this dude walking on campus like, hey, hold on. I got an idea.
There were some stats that shocked me. Like, I knew of Dr. J. We know of Dr. J through highlights. We don't talk about, like, the numbers he put up. But then you posted the ABA shit. You know what I mean? You were talking about that. And I'm like, oh, wait, he was really one of them guys. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't just flashy. This motherfucker was putting up crazy numbers. I think in college, he averaged 20 and 20, which blew
at
my shit.
UMass.
You know what I mean?
Like what the hell was that? Why was he at UMass? Right?
Was Camby at UMass? That's the only other player I think I remember that went to like UMass, you know what I mean? But like, were there any players that when you looked at their stats, I mean, you know they were good, but you're like, oh wow, they were that good, you know what I mean?
Dr. J was definitely one of them dudes. Moses Malone, like
right.
Oh, let's talk about it.
Hey, low key
31 and 15 or something.
Bro, low
shit?
Key, I poured out a little liquor for the Sixers. I mean, they're like the greatest team who just straight get disrespected. Like we talk about Bird and Magic, Lakers, Celtics, like they were the only two teams. There was a third team, but every time Philly won, they lost to the other. Like, it's crazy, but like they were so good and we don't know anything about them. We don't know about Andrew Toney. We don't know about Billy Cunningham. But that Dr. J era, I didn't realize either how cracking the ABA was. Cass was coming out of college like, I don't know who got the most money, like, you know, ABA or NBA, right? Even like Lou Alcindor at the time, but Kareem, like he could have went easy ABA. He just ended up making the commitment to Milwaukee. And then once the ABA came more money, he was like this honorable dude who was like, I made the commitment, right? But a lot of them dudes was like, yo, I'm going to the ABA. And that's where the hoop was. And Dr. J was lit. And we don't even know about Dr. J until he got to the – we know about Dr. J from the dunk contest, from the free throw line, which is really like a failure of Black history, right? Because we don't know about Dr. J means we don't know nothing about Connie Hawkins. And if there's no Michael Jordan without Dr. J, there's no Dr. J without Connie Hawkins, right? Like, so like some of this stuff is like literal Black history we just don't know. And it was wild. A lot of them cats in the ABA was bucket getters, like straight up. And Dr. J, we definitely sleep on him. Right now, he just like what your uncle or your pops used to be like when you was talking about how great Jordan was and he was set tripping like he did on hip hop and fashion and everything else, right? Like, you don't know nothing about this. You don't know about Dr. J, right? That's basically what Dr. J was when I was coming up, was a Jordan haters retort. That's all he was.
Right.
But
right,
Dr. J was way more than that. Yo, that team was so loaded and so good. And we don't even know about him because of Magic and Bird, essentially.
The Pistons were shocking too. I thought they were like the patron saint of grit and grind. Them motherfuckers could put up numbers too. You know what I mean? And like, I didn't know how good they were offensively. I think I would have loved the Pistons as an adult watching the Pistons if I wasn't told to hate them as a kid. You know Absolutely. What I mean? Like, that was shocking as well.
I didn't know. You know, this stuff was all so wild. We grew up in these silos, man. We don't even know. When you 14, 15, you don't even know what's actually happening. Like, right now there's a 15-year-old who's, like, watching – and they don't even know what's happening when they see Bron and see Steph. They just know they like something and it's right, appealing. Right. And then later they will learn the significance of it, right? And the impact of it. Man, I had no idea. Like, basketball didn't really invite us in until Iverson, right? Like, until Iverson kind of kicked down the door. Like, we started watching with Mike. Like, I mean the Urban. Like, after the 70s movement, you know, enter the hip-hop cycle, that's us, right? We started watching with Mike.
Real niggas.
Yeah, but we started watching with Mike. They wasn't like, yo, come on in. They was like, we're taking money. But it wasn't until AI kind of forced the envelope that was like, yeah, we want that crowd. So you don't even really know that, like, the Pistons was repping, like, this city that was straight getting just destroyed, right? That this once proud city that's so full of like hopelessness and struggle during a crack epidemic. Like, you don't know what this is why Detroit people ride so hard and they hate Mike, you know, because this meant something. Like, if the Pistons matter, like they were repping for people, they were giving hope to people. It was a bunch of Black dudes who were doing something at a time where people were losing their livelihood in their communities. You just don't know that that's happening. And I want to root for that retroactively, right? I wish I was like coming up live and I wasn't like just joking about the little bitty shorts, right? And I was like, ah, you lost the Magic again, right? So I want to root for that and what they meant for the city and how them being rebels and bad boys and raiders and really the kind of undertones that was with that. Like, yeah, it's like, dang, man, I wish somebody had told me, like, But it was significant. It was huge when you think about it.
We talked about that after that chapter. Like, you full, like, all they've ever been to people our age, really, at this point, right, is like the foil. They're the other part of the documentary, You know, they're like, they start playing the cello instead of the fucking violin. And, you know, they cut to Detroit and it's like, these mean, stupid motherfuckers over here. And like, this was the first time we read the chapter. We all talked about it. We're like, well, I feel like if this was now, we all would be huge fucking Pistons fans. Like, it's just like, you. I don't know that I've ever seen their story told from their perspective, because I'm not going to buy a Pistons book. You know what I mean? And there's no documentary like that about that team. So I love that chapter. That was probably my favorite chapter in the book, just because I felt like you turned that whole story on its head in such a simple way. But it really was like, I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan because of the age that I was, obviously. But like, you read the chapter and you're like, oh, I hope these dudes win. I know they're not going to win, but it's like, I hope these dudes beat his ass.
Think about this, though. Like, I think low key, this is a side note. I think Tyler is one of the like slept on writers in the country. And I really think he should be right regularly, but I would love to read a piece in your voice about like how the Pistons been begging for somebody to see him for 30 years. Think about that. Like what they did, like nobody, like we don't like Isaiah, and we being the basketball nation don't like Isaiah largely because Jordan don't like Isaiah.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. You'll know when you get it. It'll say eBay, authenticity, guarantee. You'll feel it because when it comes to your feet, eBay has your back. Maybe it's that head-turning pair for hooping or a hot new collab. Whatever you're after, when you cop on eBay, you can trust that your kicks will be checked by experts, not just any expert. Sneaker experts who live and breathe the culture. Real people with real hands-on authentication experience. That's when blue checkmark represents on our listing. eBay Authenticity Guarantee, meaning every inch, stitch, sole, logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. So when you finally step into those grill kicks, you'll realize the feeling is unlike any other. And with eBay Authenticity Guarantee, the feeling of real is always within reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
And think about like how long they've been trying to be like, hold on, man, we wasn't exactly who y'all painted us to be. And mm-hmm. It's kind of like, it's funny in one context, like, dang, that's messed up. Like, that's hilarious. But then the other part is like, that's kind of messed up, man. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we for sure don't give the Pistons their props. They were a fucking game seven and a Zeke sprained ankle away from running off a three-peat during the fucking Showtime Laker Bird Celtics era, right? Like, that is ridiculous, and it doesn't get talked about enough,
it's
for sure.
It's crazy how it comes down to that, though, right? Like, it's a few It's a few like dynasties that almost happened that are right there. And it's like one turn, one little thing. Like that's, if you the 76ers, that's what you think. You like, dang, like if Magic doesn't come in and do like, you know, play five positions, drop 40, like, right. We're talking about them. Like it's wild how it switches on that.
For sure, for sure. So I want to talk about your boys here, the Warriors, man, and you know, the most recent dynasty we've had. The thing that's unique about the Warriors is they were a sneak job. And you usually don't see that with dynasties, right? Like usually what we see dynasties coming a mile away. Dynasties are usually like destiny fulfilled, right? Like you see a guy like Mike, you say, okay, get him some guys. He's going to get some rings. You see a guy like Shaq and Timmy, you think the same thing, right? We didn't see that coming with the Warriors. You know what I mean? So it was a sneak job. And what I'm curious about is you being the guy who was there, ground zero. Like, did you see it coming, or where was there a moment when you were like, okay, this could be something special?
Man, y'all ain't see my article that I wrote back in 2007 about? No, I ain't noticed. <Fair enough. laughs> I remember like real spit. I remember when the Warriors first won the title and we were in Cleveland. And y'all got to remember, man, like I grew up, like our entire childhood was about going to see the other team. Like, it was like this team is coming to town, or like kind of mockingly having some G League level dude as your favorite player. Right. Like those players are revered here because they would at least put up a fight. Like dudes like Earl Boykins. Right. Like he never was actually that good, but he's a legend out here because he was 5 foot nothing, right? 100 and nothing. And he would at least fight, right? So like that was our childhood. So I remember the moment the Warriors were like winning the title. And I don't know if y'all remember back then, if the Warriors went up by 15, that was game. They won like 50 something straight games if they led at 15 at any point. And they went up 15 in game six. And that's when we were like, all right, we were like, they're about to win a title. So we start writing. And I remember having this moment. My father died like 14 years earlier, but I had this incredible urge to call him, right? So I was just like,
oh, wow.
Yo, because we grew up, this was my childhood. Like me and my father pissed at every Warrior, mad at, like if he didn't fall asleep, right? Like it's just like all that. I hate Winston Garland, right? Like all that. Like so I'm like, yo, I wanted to call my dad, be like, yo, the war. And then it hit me like my father's gone. So I'm sitting here typing this story, like crying, like literally in Cleveland, like missing my dad. But the reason that moment is significant, because it was never going to happen again. Like it was like this was the one time, right? Like nobody was sitting there in that moment like, so it begins, right? Like
three out of the like, the Warriors take over.
I don't care who's saying it. Nobody, like you knew, okay, they had arrived, right? They would be a team now you got to talk about when you talk about championships. And maybe they get another one, right? Maybe like you just didn't know that they would morph the game like this. And then Steph would become like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I've been covering stuff his entire career. When he got drafted, his mother asked Steve Kerr, can he be any good? You think he can make it? Like, Sonya wasn't like, yo, so my son about to be a Hall of Famer. So where my house at, right? She was like, yo, you think he can make it? Like, and Steve Kerr's like, your son's going to be really good in the league, right? So it wasn't like, none of this was, like, nobody knew this. Nobody knew it. And I do think that was a big deal. I do think, you know, in NBA, you follow your player, right? Like a lot of it is like, yo, how my player feels about something is a lot how I feel. And there's a whole lot of pissed off players about the fact that the Warriors kind of jumped the line. You got Russell Westbrook, yeah. James Harden, LeBron, like all these players are like, wait, hold on, bro. This is my time. Like, who's this Harrison Barnes dude, right? Like, where is this Draymond Green coming from? And so I do think a lot of players who was riding with their player took on that sentiment, right? Like, hold on, I don't like the, you know what I'm saying? And then over time, you know, you grew to respect it, but I feel like they kind of had to go through that. Like, that's the rite of passage to be a dynasty. You got to be hated, and right. They had to be.
Right. I remember thinking they were dumb as fuck for not trading Klay for Kevin Love. And boo, buddy, was I wrong as hell on that.
Another
one.
Moment, right?
So yeah, we didn't see
another
this coming.
Another moment,
yeah,
that,
sure.
Like, because you weren't, there were people in the Warriors organization who wanted that deal done. And it was like Jerry West and it was Steve Kerr, like, hey, here's my PowerPoint and all the passion I got telling you why we can't do this. But if, you know, some people in the organization was like, yo, you go get Kevin Love. And what if it happens? Maybe they win 7 in a row. Who knows? But
they win 77 games, you know.
Kelly Olynyk tearing his arm out actually helped start the Warriors, you know, reign. You know what I mean? When he snatched this shit out.
More so. Kyrie's but, knee, though.
Yeah.
That was a bigger deal in hindsight, right? Like,
right. But like talking about Klay, like, you know, Klay's coming back. How much of Klay do you think we're going to see? Are we going to see the same Klay or similar? How much of the Klay we saw prior to like two, three years ago? I think that you said you wrote in your article it was like 400 days. Was it? How many days has it been?
Over 900 now.
900 days. You know what I mean? Like, how much of Klay? That's crazy. In that,
yeah, that's wild.
That's stupid, wild. Right? How much of Klay do you think we're gonna see? You know, when he comes back. You've been watching
in that context, bit. Like more than what you would think, right? You would think after 900 days, like he won 50% Klay.
17%.
That dude is a maniac, yo. He's on the sidelines, literally in tears because he can't play. Like, I don't even know what percentage he should be at, but he gonna add to it just in the moment, right? The way he looks right now is probably about 60%, 70%, and he still ain't coming back for a few weeks. So I think he gonna walk in. I think he gonna be like maybe 75%, and then adrenaline gonna get him to 85%. Right, then just straight sheer, like, you know, remember Sherman Clump, all that wanting and wanting and wanting, like that first game. Woo! And don't front, you gonna shed a tear for Klay Thompson. You gonna be,
I'm excited as hell. I was reading your article. I was like, damn, I should like this motherfucker as much as I like this motherfucker. I don't think we ever really hated Klay though. Klay is like Klay's unhateable. You know what I mean? You always want to. Yeah, he seems like a good hang. You know what I mean? Like, that'd be my nigga in real life. You feel what I'm saying?
Bro, Klay just want to smoke out and kick it with his bulldog, bro. Like, there's nothing to not like about that dude.
And
man,
you know what's cool about, what's so amazing about Klay? Like, Klay be doing all kinds. Klay could violate. He could do anything. He could break a rule. He could violate a social norm. He could just be out of pocket. And it adds to his legacy, right? Like, it's like, yo, Klay don't make practice. How cool is he? Right? Like,
yeah. I love him.
Like, I love that guy.
It's crazy how he just don't do any wrong. Like, that dude cares about the boat and his dog and staying off TMZ. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm. I got one more question. I thought it was going to be KD's league this year, but now that we're finally seeing like the wear and tear, like, well, I thought it was going to be his league this year, now that we're seeing the wear and tear of like Bron, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're seeing Bron looks like it's year 19, you know what I mean? But like, it's Steph's league. Like, you know, like, he is the apex predator in the league. Knowing how competitive KD is, do you think he cares at all? Do you think that affects him? Like he's like, this is his year to be the guy, and he's not the guy.
Absolutely. KD and Steph the same dude. They both like maniacs, right? Like, who put like everything into this, you know, especially KD. Like, KD is that dude. Like, if you just talk to Kevin Durant about basketball, he will talk your ear off. The dude is the definition of a hooper. Like, he grew up in the struggle, like literally sleep in the gym. Like, you know, like, you know, the open run would come in like 4 hours and he had the choice to walk all the way back to his grandma's house or just stay in the gym. So he would get a mat and just sleep in the gym because he would be right back for open run. Right. Like, He that dude.
He's the musty Hooper. Bruh. He's the musty Hooper. He's a dude that, started the run already smelling like he would play the run. You know what I mean?
That ankle, bro. For sure, right? Like,
right. You feel me? Yeah.
I was about to say, we seen that ankle, right? Like, yeah.
The cold part is that was like way up the shin. Like, it's tough to get it.
Right.
But that's like, no question. Kevin Durant wants to be the best player the game has ever seen. Like, he wants it. And if he says otherwise, he's fronting. Kevin Durant wants to walk away from this game like, yo, y'all ain't never seen nobody better than me. So absolutely. I do think there's far more appreciation in their kind of competitive nature. Like, and this is the part we kind of miss as fans, and in this lust for drama. Man, life be different when you hit 28, 29, 30. Like, you don't think the same. Like, what, you know, you and by the end, you've been through some stuff, right? Like, so some perspectives changed. I do think there's a part of them that's like, we're going to be Magic and Bird. Like, that's going to be us. Like, that is us. We're going to go all out. We're going to compete. We're going to battle. And we're going to see who come out on top. I'm obviously better than you, but it's going to be great going against you, right? Like, that's their mode. So absolutely. Can you imagine if the Warriors win a title before him?
Like, he going to be.
Think about that. Think about it. Like,
Tyler can't. Oh, look at Tyler just got.
that's going to be a doozy.
Hey,
I think it happens this year. I think it could happen. I think it happens this year with Klay coming back.
It's going to be a doozy because Draymond will make sure it is. Like, can you? Draymond is the uncle who just got like a bonus with his new job, and he showed up at Thanksgiving turning all the way. That's going to be Draymond. Like, yo, y'all said I couldn't get a job. Boom, I got a job and they gave me some money. So now I'm slapping people with my $100 bills at Thanksgiving, laying out all the family secrets. Like, that's going to be Draymond. Don't let Draymond get a title, y'all. I'm just telling y'all right now. I mean, he said it.
He said it. We were cracking up because he's like the last athlete where him threatening to talk shit actually means something. You know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, that's going to carry some weight, bro.
Yeah, that dude, oh, man, you can't. It'll be great. You're going to have the greatest episodes of all time.
For sure.
It's going to be lit.
So last question for me, Marcus. I loved your approach on this and diving into the new old newspapers, because I've done that with local history stuff, and I think it's fascinating how much journalism has changed, right? Like, people were writing stuff, they had access. There's stories in a regular daily newspaper that would like end the fucking world now if you were to run one of these stories. What were your thoughts on how, you know, your industry has changed over the years from those Mike and teams up to now? Like, were you sort of reading some of these old stories, wishing that you could cover things in that era, or how did you feel about the way that kind of evolved over the course of your research?
Well, for sure, one of the things that's jarring that made me kind of think about how I write is, bruh, like, journalism absolutely reflects how society thinks. Right? Like, I'll be like, hey, you, like, some of these reporters, I'm like, bruh, how could you just say that? Like, but it was cool at the time, right? Like, the best colored player, like, hey, hey.
They rolled out a team of five darkies today.
Right.
Like, I mean, like, they rolled out a starting lineup of five darkies, which is
Heinz, nigger lover.
You don't know what you saying now. That's going to look back and you'll be like, hey, yo, you was reckless. So, yeah, it was interesting. One of the things that really stood out, though, like, Mike, I'm telling you, like, the columnists were everything, like the people with opinions, like,
right?
It was so prominent, and it wasn't like now where everybody's opinion is available. Like, back then, it was right. Like, it was one dude. Like, you see all these stories, and then one dude was popping off, like, talking crazy, right? Like, saying what he wanted to say, and it was like, yo, like, this is crazy. Can you imagine that? Like, in one market, whatever, like in Boston, there's like one voice. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, it was wild. I kind of wish I was back then. I want to be in that era where it's like, yo, you earn the spot, you get the column, you get your opinion, and then you sit on that thing for like 20 years saying whatever the hell you want, right? Like,
retire, you know, and get put into like all that, the local Hall of Fames and shit. 100%.
That seemed lit. Like, yo,
I don't like the conscience of his city.
I don't like this. And you know, this is coming from a dude who's a columnist in Oakland, right? In my hometown, right? I still feel like my opinion don't matter. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's cool, but like ain't nobody like, hey, I wonder what Marcus Thompson thinks on this, right? Like, if I have a great opinion and it finds somebody, they'll read it, but nobody's like, I wonder what I have to read what he thinks about it. Like, back then, that's how it was. So it was crazy. And they would be so reckless sometimes. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would be wild. Right, yes. Like, I'm like, yo, you really could print this. Like, this is crazy. And it makes me wonder, what am I writing now that in the future somebody going to be looking back on newspapers.com and be like, yo, this dude was out of pocket. He was problematic. He was toxic. Right, like,
I bet 20 years from now they won't believe how many times a season you talked to the top guys. Like, in my, like, I think I think the access will be, you know what I mean? I think the access is going to get more and more limited to where it's like they're not going to believe, like, oh, you talked to him before the game and after the, like, I think that's what people will look back on, because the, as you said, I mean, Tyler, at this point, Tyler probably would have been the best newspaper columnist for the first 100 years that fucking newspapers were around, right?
Facts.
But now, if you have a phone, you're in the game on that shit. And so these dudes is like, why do we want to talk to these guys?
Absolutely. I'm already feeling like that was a bygone era. Remember the locker rooms? Like, geez. Like, I don't even. Yeah. It feels out of. You know, the cold part, man, if I could get into my own little gripe. Like, man, that's our lane as black reporters. You know, I mean, a lot of us got our jobs because we could speak the language and get the locker room, right? They were like, hey, man, go talk to Jive and get in there with them.
Go talk to Jive. I mean,
they ain't saying that. But
that's what
say,
newspaper editors fucking that, say, bro. No, that's a direct quote.
You're like, hey, man, you go in there. He's good in the locker room. It's kind of like how in like basketball.
He's good in
like,
the locker room. He's good in the locker room. You know, yep.
Or either he's an athlete.
Blue guy.
Right? Like, it's like, ah, oh, nah, he's good in the locker room, man. He could really work in the locker room. That, you know.
These niggas need a nigga. These niggas need a nigga.
I wonder, I don't know. Are there like you good in the locker room reporters in hockey? I don't know. I know it's hell of a thing in basketball and football. That's what I do know. But it feel like, man, we took away our superpower, man. Like that was our thing. Like, we go in there like, hey, you know, nobody is better at this than Mark Spears. Nobody. Like, and... like, Dave, like, he don't even get to go to the locker room no more. But Mark Spears is such a gangster. He'll just, like, stand outside the locker room and just be like, hey, come holler at me. And ain't nobody walking past him. But for the rest of us who got our jobs, because we can, you know, we can talk to Jive. Like, it's tough on Zoom. You can't do that on Zoom. I tried it on Zoom one time. Like, just trying to, like, hey, I'm here. Like, you know, out of all these screens, I'm going to let you know that you're talking to Marcus. So I was like, you know, I call Steph Wardell sometimes, right? So I'm like, Wardell. And he's like, and then I become a meme, right?
I mean, you're like, yeah, you know I remember saying? That
but
shit.
It's like, you got to do something because I'm supposed to be talking to that guy, right? I'm supposed to be there. Like, hey, I'm here now.
You know, Marcus really relates to the players. Yes. I think we should.
Mike, you know exactly what I'm talking about, man. Like, that's how we get our start. Like, man, we need some black people in there.
100%. Well, shit. I mean, I'm a local sports writer in Long Beach, but I'm the white guy that the high school kids talk to. That's not the old white guy. You know what I mean? So,
we'll talk to that. Oh, absolutely.
I'm on the junior side.
I remember
of that.
I was a high school reporter. Look, John. They used to. So I got started at a suburban newspaper like Walnut Creek, right? Like that's where I started covering like high school sports in the burbs, right? Covering the,
how long ago was this?
I got started in 99. So my first few years, okay, I started covering NBA in 04. So my first few years, I was covering like water polo and lacrosse, right? But every now and again, one of these teams in Oakland get really good, and somebody got to go cover, you know, Oakland Tech or McClimas. Who you think they? Who you think they was?
Marcus, we need you at the Mac on Saturday.
Right.
Like, come on, man. I'm out here in the burbs, man. Like, let me chill. I got my feet up. There's white people everywhere. You know, we get a certain swag. We're the only black dude in the room. Like, hey, I'm in here, right? Come tell me something. I got a badge. What? Don't make me be a regular dude at an Oakland high school basketball game. I can't stand up there. But every time they were like, hey, go do that. When the Raiders were leaving, it's like, hey, man, we need somebody to really work the audience in the parking lot. This might be the last game. Oh, y'all sending me to the Raiders tailgate. Oh, okay, I got you.
That's fucking funny. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the book. If you don't have Dynasties, please go get it. You have, I don't know how many fucking episodes we spent talking about it, but you have lots of the interview plus lots of other conversation to catch up on. Marcus, thanks again for hopping on, man. We appreciate
thanks you. Thanks for taking the opportunity to slum on the book club and take a break from stuff that really matters. I appreciate the willingness to put me among the elites you talk about in the book club. Like, this don't belong, I promise you.
Thank you. I was tired of crying while reading. And so I was learning and having fun. You know what I mean? So the other books were great too. You know what I mean? This is a good balance. So thank you for writing this for real.
John wanted to read Beloved during a time period as he was having his first child. And I was like, I don't think we should do that. And Tyler was like, we're going to read Dynasties. By he's like, we're not reading Beloved with your newborn baby.
Crisis. You don't even know it. Like,
right. Beloved, some heavy stuff.
He was about to be in there like Trey and Boys in the Hood. Like,
fighting the air, you feel me?
Yes, good job, Tyler. I appreciate y'all. Y'all are the best. I'm telling you, like, I'm proud of your success. Tyler, no, man. I've been telling Tyler this for years. Like, hey, I tried to get Tyler at the Athletic, but we didn't have $4 million, so he didn't come rock with us.
I was say, Tyler's too smart.
We be trying to get Tyler too. We be telling this nigga like, come on, dog.
No, he's smart, but he's too, like, I had it backwards. Marcus had it backwards. Journalism should be the side hustle, not the fucking, not the main play. Tyler figured it out before all of us, bro.
Figure it out, no question.
Yeah, you know, you know, the right opportunity to write back, come along. You know, you might see me dip the pen again. So we'll see.
He says Mike too.
Must be Mike.
He leaning real heavy on that Mike. Like, that Mike heavy
I'm
as a motherfucker.
Ending generational curses over here with my pen that he don't even want to use. Like, think about that. Like, I'm giving all I got to try to save my family. He like, I might pull it out. Like, it's levels to this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in a good spot for quite a few years, making good money. I've been working remotely since fucking 2016, bro. So like, my life has been how I wanted to be for quite a while.
He doesn't have to worry about hedge funds. You don't have to worry about like layoffs. About how are we going to fund the journalistic enterprise in America? He's just like, I have a job that I could do easily.
I'm proud of you, brother. Like, that's important. By the way, I 1,000% told Draymond he's got to come on the show.
Oh, I told Draymond like
anytime, bro. 12. I'll leave work.
I was like, bro, Draymond on the show. And y'all better not go soft because it's Draymond. Give him all of
No. Hell no. I don't think Draymond Draymond. You feel me? I think he wants us to really, you know what
I'm
saying?
That's why I love Draymond. Like, he don't appreciate kissing up. Like, if you ain't really close with Draymond until he cuts you out. So like, love that dude.
I think the thing with Dre is too, like, even with like with all the players in the Warriors, like, we didn't like the Warriors. We never disliked the players, though. You know what I mean? Like, we was happy. I mean, we were in the game. You know what I'm saying? It's fuck Draymond. You know what I mean? You kick Bron in the balls, we're going to clown the shit out of you. You know what I'm saying? But like, when we outside of the game, like, you know what I'm saying? We like, Draymond's a real one. You feel me? Like, when we hear him speak and stuff, like talking about basketball, we fuck with him. You know what I mean? So I'd be hell excited, but also,
they like that part of the game. Like, you could talk, like, you could say whatever you want about Steph, and he'd be like, yeah. Like, man, you might be the toughest dude from, like, suburbia I ever met in my life. Like, and he'd be like, yeah,
that's personal.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Those dudes. those dudes love being the villain, which is why I don't get why so many people were hanging on to that Steph is humble thing. I was like, no, he isn't, and he's cocky as fuck, and humble is boring as shit. Why Steph do y'all want him to be boring?
One of the most arrogant players to ever play the game.
No, but it's the NBA thing.
If I was him, I would be dragging my nuts too.
It's the white basketball, black basketball thing Marcus was talking about earlier. It's that segment of basketball fans need someone to project themselves onto. This dude would have
light-skinned. He
would have tossed the ball back to the referee after he scored the touchdown. Like, that's just, and it doesn't matter. But look, we've seen that in with all kinds of athletes. It doesn't matter who you actually are to people. It's who are you in my head, and he's that dude in their head because he's not doing shit that they feel like they couldn't do. He's not touching the top of the backboard or whatever, right? I can shoot 3 points.
Ever, though.
I totally agree with you.
Turning
totally
his back on the ball, talking to the nigga at the end of the bench that ain't got shit to do with the game. Letting him know I'm dragging my nuts across you too, nigga. But you feel
think
me?
About this.
That is, I mean.
That dude is 6'3". He just got to 190 because he didn't put all his muscles, right? And he went to Charlotte Christian went to the NBA from Charlotte Christian to Davidson. Like, you don't get to be Steph with some inferiority complex, right?
Dude
is a maniac.
His finishing move is the seawalk. You feel me?
Exactly, right? He did the Bernie lean and the seawalk in Oklahoma City, right? Like, but the dichotomy of Steph, and this the part I like about Steph, and I think all these dudes are whole humans, right? They're whole beings with layers and in fact, like Russell Westbrook is a maniac on the court. Everything I heard about him, great father, great family dude, right? So when you meet Steph, it will blow your mind, right? The same dude who's out here literally turning away from the shot. the cool guy walk away from the explosion scene in a movie. Like, that's Steph, right? And then you meet him, and it's like, yo, you're like the most reachable dude. So he does have this persona where he feels so reachable. Like, he's just the dude in line at Chipotle. But he is a murderer. And that's the thing about Steph. Like, there's nothing, like Steve Kerr says, that he's the most humble guy off the court, the most arrogant guy on it. Like, Steph is playing out 20 years of being punked and people trying to punk him and call him soft and say he weak, and him and his brother was going across the tracks in Charlotte to find a real hoop and having to take the big cousin with him because they might get jumped. Like, it's 20 years of like, I made it, now I'm about to show y'all. So it's crazy to watch Steph and be like, this dude is humble. Like, he literally was dancing on James Harden every playoff series. Like,
the rabbit got the gun and it's a motherfucking absolutely. AK, nigga. He letting that bitch fly.
But
you feel me?
It's what's great about it, right? It's what's incredible about it. Sure. And the reason I respect Steph is because when the rabbit lost the gun and Elmer Fudd had it, he was like, all right, bring it, because this is part of the game. I'm out here dancing and strutting, so I got to take it when y'all dogging my shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I love that. Yeah, you got me smirk that Steph had when CP3 shimmied
on him.
In that playoff game. You know, Steph wasn't even mad. He's like, yep.
Nah, I've tried to bait him. Trust me, I've been behind the scenes. Hey, man, you see what I mean? I'm trying to get him. You know,
that leans more into the psycho shit to me, though, that he's not mad after a nigga does his move on him. You know what I mean? Like,
unfazable.
No question.
No, he is different. But then his dad was getting cooked by Jordan all his childhood, so of course he knows how the game goes.
So maybe he's Bane. You know what I mean? I was born in the
dark. That dude grew up watching the killer, right? Like,
right, you feel me? All right, Marcus, if anything happens with the Athletic,
that.
Bro.
Y'all just gave me my name. There
it is. Maybe he's Batman. He could be Batman. You know, he saw his dad get cooked. You know what I mean?
Good too, but
he's
showing
out. Right, you know what I'm saying? I got something for that ass now. You feel me?
That's hella funny.
Think I'm just a
Marcus,
rich kid.
You're welcome back anytime. Future co-host of Jenkins and Jones. We appreciate you. And go get Dynasties. Go get Dynasties if you don't have it already. We did sell a lot of books for you, though, bro. We had a lot of people tweeting at us that they bought the book. So
you sure did.
We're feeling good about ourselves.
You sure
we're
did.
Feeling
the
good
publisher
about
let
ourselves.
Me know.
Okay.
Marcus sold a lot of books. We just put it on the pod, nigga. Like, we ain't do.
We come through with the bump.
It was a fun book.
That's why it's the Jones bump. I'm with that. Let's go ahead and get that started.
I love that.
Let's go ahead and get that started.
Make it a thing. Make it a thing.
Go ahead and make it a thing.
Put us on a tour. Put us on a book tour.
Y'all just let me be the last basketball. Nah, I ain't gonna do that. Now go back to changing lives and shifting paradigms.
We're going back to Beloved, man. We're going to Beloved. Get these tears flowing again. You feel me? Yeah.
All right, our thanks to Marcus for hopping on with us. I made the joke at the end, but I mean, it feels like every other guest we have is someone where I'm like, oh, they could just host the show. Like, you know, if John has another kid, Tyler has a kid, like, you know, if something happens, one of us needs to take a month off. It's like, we can just do the, you know, like Letterman or Leno used to do, where it'd be like, someone's going to come in and guest host their show for a week. It's like, we could just ask Marcus to come back and just do the show.
He's an Oakland dude. We could probably pull an Oakland nigga off the street and they could, you know, jump in for, you know what I mean? Like, that's a special breed of human. You know what I mean? So, yeah. You come in talking about town business, hey, swap me out.
But yeah, all the guys we brought on here have been our fucking Twitter pals for years and shit. So, you know, there's always that rapport there. So, yeah, definitely.
I didn't know he was trying to recruit you. I didn't know he was recruiting the recruiter, Tyler. I didn't.
Yeah. We talked turkey a few years back, but, you know.
Honestly, I'm surprised when somebody isn't trying to recruit Tyler. I think that's a weird thing to not want to get him to do writing shit for you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Tyler heard that The Athletic was charging $1 a month for subscriptions, and he was like, I don't know what you're going to pay me, but it's not going to be enough if you're only charging people.
The thing is, Tyler has four things he really gives a fuck about, and he's surrounded by them in his life. So to get him away from those shit things, it's like, yeah. You got to really throw a huge bag. I'm already good. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's exactly it.
I remember I have told this story, but I know that Tyler was a big fan of Drunk History when it was on Comedy Central. And I happened to know someone who was really tight with one of the producers on that show. And I was trying to set up, what if you were to do one about Richmond or whatever? And then it was like, you found out they filmed it somewhere else or something. And that it was not like paid, and you were like, I'm good, bro.
I don't give a fuck about exposure.
You're
give
like, I'm
me
not
money,
trying to
please.
Be on a TV show that I like for free. I'm good, man. Like, I already have plans on Saturday. Like,
exactly. I can just get high and watch it. You know, you trying to add work to my life? You know what I'm saying? Unpaid work? That sounds like slavery. Get that away from me. That PU, that stinks, nigga.
All right. That's our show for the week. I was gonna introduce a new segment, That's a Devil segment in talking about.
That's a devil. That's a devil.
Yeah, we for sure got to roll with that. Let's go,
hey,
bro.
We might even put that on some shirts, nigga.
I got
I wear a That's a Devil shirt. That's a devil.
I got a great candidate for Monday's podcast. So we'll get to that next week. But thanks for fucking with us as always. Thanks again to Marcus for hopping on. That was a great interview. And we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
That's a devil.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a 1-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give love and logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.